from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, Bankstown? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Brendan behind the glass. It is a Wednesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So the Astros won baseball yesterday. They evened up the series against the second-place team in the American League West, the South Oklahoma Rangers. 4-3 victory. Dusty Baker after the game, because we talked about this yesterday, Blankers. Now, maybe this wasn't just a mid-June game. Maybe this wasn't a dog day of the summer series against the Rangers. Perhaps if the Rangers swept you after winning game one, they win the next two. Perhaps suddenly would have been a 5.5 game lead in the division. Perhaps we have a race on our hands in the American League West. So we were talking about the importance of the series yesterday. And then Dusty Baker yesterday, after the win, talking to the media in his visiting manager's office there in South Oklahoma, he dropped this nugget on us.
Yeah, it might be the victory of the year. I mean, that was, I can't remember a more exciting finish than that. And, boy, we needed that badly.
Victory of the year, the way that you won it. You scored the 4 runs in the 8th inning, but also because, I'm not going to say the Rangers were nipping at your heels, but a team that you could have injected life into if they sweep you in that series. Do you agree with Dusty Baker that that was the biggest win of the year?
Not because it was the Rangers, but I will say that I can understand why he said that, because regardless of the opponent, you had been scuffling. You had been taking it on the chin at home. You, after, you know, a slow start, were riding high, and everybody was talking about the division was already yours, and we were talking about, you know, really focusing on the other teams in the American League. And then, you know, you get kind of manhandled by the Mariners with a little crap talking that you instigated with Mariner fans for good measure. And then on top of that, you come back for a weekend series against the Marlins and you get used a little bit. So then you absolutely gift wrap Monday night's game in Arlington and you start thinking about, hey, it's conceivable this clubhouse is starting to have a little doubt. They're starting to have a little worry. They're not riding high like they were. They're not feeling themselves like they were. And then lo and behold, the same way you almost give one away Monday night, you steal one on Tuesday. And the way you did it, and the way you kind of left them with their tail in their hands, you basically walk away with such a euphoric good feeling. We'll see how they, but no, that with the short turnaround, we'll see how they bounce back today. That'll dictate a lot. But I can understand why he felt like this was as big a victory as he felt it was.
I think it was a combination of all of those things, right? One, you know, the old cliche, which I do believe is true, that your most recent game or your next game is always the most important. I know that's cliche. I know that that's coach speak, but it does carry some truth to it as well, because you're trying to stack as many wins as you can. The fact that you have been reeling, you've lost back-to-back series. You lost to the Miami Marlins, Florida Marlins, whatever they're going by at this time of year. You lost to Seattle at home, a place in which you never lose a series to the Seattle Mariners. It's the first time in 10 tries that you lost a series at home to Seattle. So the fact that you have been scuffling, you want to turn it around. So that's something that I would throw into the variable, because I do agree with Dusty Baker. I believe it was, to this date, the most important win for the Houston Astros this season. And then I do believe the other part of that layer. Am I worried that the Astros are going to lose the division to the Texas Rangers? No, I'm not. But I also don't want it to be a race. I don't want the Rangers to sweep you 3 games at their place, and all of a sudden Rangers are like, we're 5.5 games back. There's still a lot of baseball left to play. We just swept the daddy of the American League West, the juggernaut of the American League West. We can play to that level. So I agree with Dusty Baker for all of those reasons that the Houston Astros, that they did pick up their most important victory of the season with that win in South Oklahoma yesterday.
And that's fair to think that way. Look, I think however you want to slice it, that was a win that was much needed. That was an inspirational win that can absolutely change the tone in the clubhouse. And that was a win. Look, and credit to us. And I mean, I don't think we get enough credit these days, but credit to us for playing Urquidy's song. Yeah. And making a difference. Because when we don't, he does not show up and look well. When we do,
listen to that smooth sound.
He absolutely just pushes. And he pitched well. He pitched well enough to win.
Bum, bum.
And lo and behold, when you thought that he had done his part, but the rest of the team would not, They did what they had to do to get him the victory. So credit to us, credit to the Astros, credit to getting an uplifting, maybe locker room changing victory. Because I don't know if you know this, Jeremy, or not. Monday night after the third inning, they didn't get a hit. Last night after the third inning, they didn't have a hit until the big eighth inning. So the offense is still nowhere near where it needs to be or as most people expected it to be. And that continues to be a bigger issue than anything else on this ball club.
There's a lot of things that I think can spark an offense, because I do think that this offense is a spark away from taking off, whether it's adding a piece soon at some point, whether it's just some timely hitting. We know that the Astros' numbers with runners in scoring position are terrible. If you look at the Astros' on-base percentage, they're a team that's in, the top five. And on-base percentage, they're top five in slugging. So some of the peripheral numbers are there. They just need the spark, I think, to really take them off. And maybe the spark was what Corey Seager made one of the most boneheaded plays I have ever seen in Major League Baseball. Part of that four-run eighth inning, the Astros with runners on the corners, first and third, when Jose Altuve went first to third with nobody out, which I didn't love, but he was safe, so it all worked out.
He's a great base runner, Jim.
Man, that was risky. But it worked out. So you have runners on the corners, nobody out, and you get a ground ball to short from Alex Bregman. Seager, instead of turning the double play, tries to come home with it. They're up 3-0 in the eighth inning. You don't need the out at the plate. In fact, even if you do get the out at the plate, you still have Yordan Alvarez coming up as the tying run. I'm not even being hyperbolic here. That is one of the stupidest plays I have ever seen in a Major League Baseball game.
I don't know that I'm going to go as far as ever, but it was dumb. I mean, it was downright stupid in the fact that whatever manual you read, no matter what coach's anthem that you follow when everybody is preaching how to play infield, that's a no-brainer. You have a three-run lead, and you have a tailor-made double play ball, and you instead choose to try and get an out in a rundown at the plate. If that's the tying run or the lead run, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's anything but that, you take the two outs, then you're one out away, no matter what else happens, from victory. And that is the smart thing to do. The fact that he's not only a veteran player, but he is making the money he's making, coming off a team that was as World Series experienced as he came off of, that's inexcusable.
Yeah, that was. I was watching that, just like, my goodness. If I'm Woodward in that dugout for the Rangers, I am losing my mind. What are some stupid plays you've seen in baseball? 713-780-ESPN. You brought up Jose Urquidy, who I thought looked good for the Houston Astros yesterday. 3 runs, 5 hits, 6 innings. Like, he wasn't dominant, but solid performance, I thought. I thought he pitched about as good as we've seen him pitch at times this season. It was interesting, too, after the game, Brian McTaggart talking to Urquidy along with the rest of the media there in South Oklahoma, and Urquidy telling the media that he's ditched his cutter and is working on his slider more, which is pretty fascinating, because if you look at the numbers for Urquidy, this is what we talked about last start after Urquidy.
Like a week ago,
After his last start where he got rocked against Seattle, that he has lost all faith in his slider. He's using it the least of any of the pitches that he's thrown. He's been experimenting with the cutter, a pitch that he did not throw last season. His slider was good last year. So pretty interesting that Jose Urquidy has completely ditched the cutter, going to work in that slider more, which was an effective pitch for him last season in 2021. Look, the cutter hasn't been terrible this year. The slider has been. But if that gives you back to Jose Urquidy pre-2022, if this is the change, the Astros might have found something with Urquidy.
Jeremy, if a cutter doesn't cut, was it ever a cutter at all?
His numbers weren't bad with the cutter, though.
But I got to believe that's why you go away from it, because when they're looking at tape, they're realizing of all the pitches that either he's not placing or hitters are taking advantage of, it's probably the fact that the cutter isn't moving the way he wants it to, or staying in the, you know, or he has the right control of it. But for whatever the reason, if he does this and it works, more power to him and the law firm, because if they're getting it done and finding a way to find something that, you know, a lot of guys may not have taken the time to realize, and kudos on him for being open to change. A lot of guys, you know, once they get somewhat established in the big leagues, that's their decision to make and theirs only, and a lot of times they're too rock-headed to make it. But if it helps him and he pitches like he pitched last night, more power to him and everybody that saw, you know, whatever was going on and making that change. Because he looked good last night.
Yeah, he did. He looked more like the Jose Urquidy that we've grown to love in the city of Houston, the one that's pitched in big games in the city of Houston. So hopefully that was the change that the Astros needed with Jose Urquidy just abandoning that cutter and then working again on the slider, which was a good piece for him last year. I loved his three-pitch mix last year. You know, fastball, low to mid-90s. You throw in that slider that could get guys out, and then his changeup as well. It would be a big boost for the Astros to get back the Jose Urquidy pre-2022. And then, of course, Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker with the big hit. We talked about that four-run eighth inning, the stupid play by Corey Seager trying
this
to get Altuve at the plate.
I mean, that was a Tuck job to the biggest degree, man.
Listening to him in the postgame, like, he's like very much like, dude, where's my car? Because they were like, what were you looking in that at bat? What was the game plan? And he's like, I just wanted to get the ball over the infield. Like, Kyle Tucker's just a dude that he's going to go into the box. He took off the batting gloves, too, by the way.
Yes, before the at-bat. Yep.
Before the dong that gave the Astros the lead. So nice to see Tucker. Hopefully he can get rolling. People like to say Tucker in the three-hole. I'm fine with Tucker in the five-hole. I think Tucker in the five-hole is a really good spot. You need protection for one of the best hitters in all of baseball, right? Like, if Yordan Alvarez can be in the four-hole and you have Yuli Gurriel hitting behind him, what in the world is – why would anybody ever throw to Yordan Alvarez? Why would you ever give him a pitch to handle? Same thing with Bregman. So I like Tucker in the five-hole to give Yordan that protection, and it paid off yesterday because Tucker hit the dong there to give the Astros.
I like those guys next to each other in the lineup. Mm-hmm. I don't care which order you put them in, but I'm with you. I prefer Yordan at the four and Tucker at the five, and I believe that's formidable in the middle of any lineup. When you look at that and you realize I got to pitch to one of them, and both guys can do damage, and the way they're hitting the baseball right now, it's perfect. I mean, we're still trying to figure out what Dusty's trying to figure out at the top of the lineup and where mm-hmm. Alex Bregman fits in. Because I'll tell you this, and I was going to text you guys, and then I was just going to tweet it out the minute it happened. I don't know what happened to if Alex Bregman needs more sand in his pants or what. But the warning track power is all I see these days. No matter, remember I mentioned it the other day where two balls in the same spot in the alley in left center field that I always thought would get out. Neither one got out. And then last night down the line, which isn't a long drive in Arlington, and it's warning track power again. And I'm going, man, where is his pop?
Yeah, he hit that one 317 yesterday. We'll get into that Breggy power. And is that power gone in our next segment? Also, we'll talk about the thumb. The thumb heard around the city of Houston. Jeremy Pena placed on the IL with thumb, nasty D word, discomfort. You hate to see it with the Houston Astros. We'll also ask you, Hive, was yesterday the biggest win for the Astros to date in the 2022 Major League Baseball season? We'll take your reaction, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. My bat's over there. Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Brandon. We'll get
you
into
sure someone
all...
didn't take it?
No, it's right there.
Okay, good.
Right. We'll get into all of that next. Killer Bees, ESPN97.5, ESPN92.5.
ESPN97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Was the win yesterday for the Astros the biggest win they've had this season? Dusty Baker says, I think it was, you know, playing a team that's in second. They've been reeling a little bit right now, scuffling a little bit right now. Then they woke up, four runs in the eighth inning. Corey Seager to thank a little bit with that. We were asking what are the some of the stupidest plays you've seen in baseball history, because I think that's right up there with Corey Seager. Maton and the Padres dropping that infield pop-up for the walk-off win was one of the most brain-dead moments I've ever seen. Eric the Driver. Was that Maton? Because that was Bregman off the bat,
right? Yeah, it was Bregman off the bat. I didn't realize it was Maton either.
Yeah, maybe that was a typo there. But I do remember the Bregman walk-off pop-up bases loaded infield.
They call it the
single
17-foot game winner or something like that.
That's up there as one of the better ones, too. But that's kind of more miscommunication, right, than stupid. You know what I mean? Like, somebody's not taking charge.
Like, Canseco off the melon for a home run was dumb, but that was...
But it's not even a
misjudged fly
right?
ball. Yeah, it wasn't a thinking man's play.
It's like a misplay. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Astros will be looking for the series tonight, I guess I should say this afternoon in South Oklahoma. First pitch at 3:05. in the rubber game of that series. 713-780-3776. So Jeremy Pena has been placed on the injured list today. Remember diving for that ball in shallow center field, came down awkwardly, looked like a sniper got him, looked like there was somebody in the grassy knoll there in South Oklahoma, but fell on his hand awkwardly, did not leave the game. He finished the game, but was not in the lineup yesterday. They said it was, they flew him back to Houston because he got observed by the Rangers doctors. They wanted him to be observed by the Astros doctors, so they flew him to Houston, and then he went under all the tests, MRIs, X-rays. Yeah, I heard that.
That's weird.
I mean, I'm sure he was flying commercial.
But how many different flights? There has to be so many flights between Love Field just for Southwest alone, and whatever the other DFW to get home. They had to find a way to get him home quickly.
It's pretty funny. Like, why not just hop on 45 and get him home that way? It's almost faster to do it that way than sitting in the airport. But whatever. Anyways, they place him on the injured list today with what they're calling thumb discomfort. Chandler Rome, who was talking to Dusty Baker earlier today because they're playing an early afternoon game at 3:05 against the Rangers, he mentioned that they're not really that concerned. Like they said, here's the exact tweet from Chandler Rome. Dusty Baker said that Jeremy Pena had an MRI that didn't show any significant damage, but Pena won't swing a bat for at least a week. So that's interesting. They also recalled J.J. Mattejevic from Sugarland. I actually want to see him get some at-bats to see if maybe he can, you know, spark a little bit of offense over at first base.
He's been hitting well in Sugarland lately. Obviously, the first time up, it was a whole new ball game, a whole new world for him, and it looked like he might have just been happy to be there and was a little overmatched, so you hope he plays well. The biggest, most encouraging thing to me is the double play that was turned last night by Aledmys Diaz in the ninth inning to bail Presley out. The fact that Altuve's part of it was one thing with a good flip. The timing and the arm. And earlier, he made a couple of plays, even one that didn't result in an out where he went deep into the hole, slid, and almost got, I forget who it was, but you look at that and go, you know what, in a short window of time, if that's what you need to do so that Pena gets right, I feel okay with Diaz at shortstop.
See, to me, it's like short-term, can you live with Jeremy Pena on the injured list? Like, what is the significance of Pena being on the IL? And Diaz did flash some leather yesterday. Came down awkwardly on that diving play with his shoulder, and I thought that they might just place Jeremy Pena on the IL to call up another infielder, which they did, just to give Dusty some options. Look, I don't mind Jeremy Pena being placed on the IL. Like, we saw even whenever he had the sore knee that he was kind of chomping at the bit to get back maybe quicker than he needed to be back, and the Astros ended up holding him off a few more days. We know that the Astros are worried. I don't know if maybe worried's too strong a word, but they're being careful with the amount of games Jeremy Pena plays this season because he's not played a ton of games in a single season over the course of his entire career because he's still very young, because of the wrist injury, because of the COVID year where he didn't play at all that season. So, like, I'm all right with that. I'm a little worried that it could be a little bit more serious than the Astros are letting on. That's been the case, and it's been the Astros' MO to kind of go that route for a long time. So short term, I'm totally okay with paying you to the IL for 10 days. If he's out for 10 days, if he's out for 2 weeks, like, that's fine. You can live with that because of Aledmys Diaz. Now, you start going to a month or longer, which I don't think that's the case here with Pena. Reading the tea leaves, you know, listening to Click, listening to Baker, I don't think it is a serious injury. It's one you're going to monitor, obviously. But because you have Aledmys Diaz, I'm okay short-term. I'm okay for a couple of weeks.
I think the bigger thing was, which gave me concern early, is no one wanted to talk about what the body part was.
Yeah.
Forever and a day, it seemed like, the minute the news broke that he was being sent back to Houston, there was it a knee? Was it the wrist? Was it a hand? Was it what is it? When did it happen? What's going on? And everybody was mum's the word. No one was saying anything, which led you more to believe that it was major rather than minor. The only thing that eased my mind was when Chandler Rome said right from Dusty that it didn't seem like he was too worried about it. They just wanted to get a second opinion to where I could exhale a little bit and go, I'm like you. Short term, I'm fine with Aledmys Diaz at shortstop. He's played the position before. He's played it well. He's a good bat in the lineup. We've seen that no matter where he plays. Last night, he played a complete ball game. I mean, he did everything they asked him to do, and I thought he played really well. And that turn, like I said, I rewound it and watched it a couple times. The timing of it on a bang-bang play to get the bag and make a laser shot over to first base to get a much-needed double play, because Ryan Presley, I hope we get to that at some point, didn't exactly look solid.
Ryan Stressley.
Yeah.
That was Ryan Presley's alter ego last night.
Right,
your
guy.
Ryan Stressley.
Yeah, he was bringing the stress. And I felt it. But I like Diaz short-term. You just can't afford to have Jeremy Peña be out long-term.
Yeah, you can live with it short-term, especially with the lead that you have in the American League West. Dusty saying he's not going to even grip a bat for a week. I think they're protecting the player from the player. You just have to keep an eye on it and hope that what you hear is serious. Also, listening to Click down the dial with the QB1, mm-hmm. The best quarterback that talks on a microphone in the city, he mentioned that this was before they placed him on the IL, by the way. So I think that that might be noteworthy here. He said that it's nothing serious. So he said it's nothing serious. Dusty said that the MRI revealing nothing serious. I think that the Astros are all right here. I'm not going to completely rule out that it's more serious that they're letting on. But it seems like this is going to be the 10 days. Perhaps we see him, 2 weeks, maybe somewhere along that line. So it seems like the Astros might have dodged a bullet. And because they have Diaz, I think you're in a good spot where you can hang on. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So what is your concern, Hive? We'll ask you. What's your concern with Jeremy Peña and this thumb injury that has placed him on the IL? 10 days, 14 days, how long do you think he'll be out as well, and how long can the Astros sustain the injury of Jeremy Peña with a Ledesma Diaz? What did you want to get to with Presley?
I think that it gets overlooked because it was the big victory that it was, that you kind of stole a victory from the jaws of defeat, all the things we were talking about, that getting lost in the shuffle is Presley gave up 2 hits in the 9th inning. Mm-hmm. And if not for a double play ball, he might have been in some trouble and we might have been in a tie game and been in extra innings and it might not be this feel-good win of the season. And that's something that you have to, at least pay attention to, in the fact that now it's not his velocity anymore because the velocity's back. And it's not because he's working his way back into the closer role and getting back comfortable again, because he's done all of that. Now you've got to keep an eye on your closer and just say, hey, look, you can't afford to have a guy that's throwing gas on the fire instead of turning the lights out in the 9th inning. And 2 hits in a 1-run ball game in the 9th inning is not ideal from your closer. And I get it, it's just one game, but it's something to keep an eye on.
Overall, I'm going to give the bullpen a tip of the cap. They went 3 scoreless innings. They kept you in the game, and they allowed the offense to score the 4 runs in the 8th inning. Like, it's what you want for a bullpen, especially when you're down 3-0. You want those guys to come in, not surrender more runs, keep the deficit where it's at, and hope that the offense can figure it out. And they did, but the 4 runs in the 8th inning. Look, Ryan Presley's never going to be a great whip guy. Like, he's going to allow some walks. He's going to allow some hits. And one of the benefits of Ryan Presley, like, that's the negative, that's the downside, is that he is very much a ground ball pitcher that induces a lot of double plays. I think he's even amongst the league leaders in double plays induced, despite the fact that he is a closer, that he pitches, 1 inning every couple of days. So, like, Presley's going to stress you out. Like, that's why his nickname's Ryan Stressley. He's going to give up walks. He's going to give up hits. But he gets the job done somehow. And a big part of that is because he is a ground ball pitcher and can induce double plays after he gives up hits. So, I guess you take the good with the bad when it comes to Mr. Stressley.
And you take it all, and there you have the facts of life. The thing is it's so vitally important for this team to have a closer. And you go back through every one of these teams over the last 5 years, whether they had to go out and get one and whether it was a popular decision at the time or not, Osuna turned out to be the guy. And you know that when you go to to a team that is so good offensively normally at getting you a lead going into the 7th, 8th, or 9th, that you knew you could shut the door and close it down. But the main thing is that 9th inning is vital to this team at all times, and it is to any really good baseball team, but especially a team like the Astros, and that's why Presley's got to be his best. And you hope that it was just a small hiccup, but thankfully it didn't cost him last night, and the infield really picked him up. And then we just go forward again and see what we see starting today in Arlington, and then to come back home against the White Sox for a series this weekend.
A couple of benefits. You never want a player on the IL, but a couple of positives with Jeremy Peña on the IL. And I want to get to the Bregman. Has he lost all of his power? We'll discuss that when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about them for quite a while now. Doc O and his staff do a fantastic job because they're focused on what you want to get done, the goals you set for yourself, the results you want to feel and you want to see. They're going to take care of you if you're honest with them. And it starts with making your first appointment. Go to ApolloMH.com. And when you do book that first appointment, you'll find out most major insurance is accepted and there's discounts for military personnel and first responders. But then go in with an open mind. Be honest and answer their questions after they ask you some tough ones. And tell them what you're trying to achieve. If you don't have any energy in your life, tell them that. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you're having issues, they can help, but they have to know what's going on. They can get you more energy on a daily basis, whether it's B12 shots or all the different ways they have hormone therapy for both men and women. And I see both men and women in the lobby every week when I go in, and they are constantly raving about the results they've gotten from Apollo Men's Health. I mean, I can't tell you any more honestly than the fact that everything that I've been through with Apollo Men's Health, I've seen positive results, and you can too. Check them out today. Mention my name. Get a free B12 shot or a free body composition analysis on your first visit, and then let the process go from there. See if it's right for you. Believe me, they're going to take care of you every step of the way. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Hello! To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more. All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jeremy Pena's on the IL, left thumb discomfort. What's your concern level? 713-780-ESPN. And how long can the Astros sustain the loss of Jeremy Pena? 713-780-3776. Couple of other things that, look, it's never good to have a player on the IL. I'd rather have Pena healthy playing shortstop every day than serving 10 days on the injured list. Couple of reasons of why it could be a positive, though, and they both kind of relate to Yuli Gurriel a bit. One, you're going to see an extended look at Aledmys Diaz, which Aledmys Diaz's numbers this year aren't very good. It's very difficult whenever you're playing every now and then to sustain good numbers. So what does Diaz look for a full week where he's playing every single day? Does his bat look like it plays better than Yuli Gurriel at this point? And then also, I want to see Matijevic, who got called up for Pena, who got placed on the IL. I want to see him against some major league pitching. The first time he came up, he really didn't have a good opportunity, didn't really have a crack to face some good Major League Baseball. I know he had a couple of ABs, but give him a look. Give him a start or two in these 10 days.
Well, Dusty inevitably will, right? Because he is as open-minded as any manager I've ever seen about throwing a guy right into the heat of the battle in the middle of a situation, whether they're ready for it or not, and not giving two you-know-whats. He just has a knack for being able to. You know, they trade for Dubon, and within, 24 hours, he was in the lineup and playing center field. So I think you'll get your wish. I think we'll get a chance to see and evaluate as we go along. The bigger concern for me is how long this Pena thing lingers, because we've already talked about you got a tough series against the White Sox, who are scuffling a little bit, but they're still going to be up there at the end of the year.
They'll be ready to play him.
Huh?
They'll be ready to play after you eliminated them last year. You ended their year.
Like, yeah,
they'll get up for
They'll
the
be
Astros.
Fired up. There's two national TV games in the mix, I believe. There's only one AT&T Sportsnet game. So a lot more people will be keeping an eye on it for that reason as well. And you're getting closer and closer to those series against the Mets and the Yankees when you're going to want to be at full strength. You want to take that as a barometer and say, hey, look, for as much as people can say our offense hasn't been what we expected it to be this year, or we've had this issue or that issue to deal with catcher and first base and center field, how do we match up one-on-one, mano-a-mano, with the Yankees? Do we go back at it and say, hey, look, it's going to be the same old situation where, you know, we adopted you and we treat you like our child, but at the end of the day, we are your daddy and we'll move on? Or do we have to be legitimately concerned? And then on the other side of it, when you see a Mets team that in the past has been nothing more than the stepchild to the Yankees, now they're spending money and they're getting results and they're expecting Scherzer and DeGrom back as they continue to do rehab starts. You look at it and you say, hey, these are two teams that are going to be a really good test, and it's a good barometer to say, here's where we are now, but where are we when we match up against teams that are really good?
Yeah, I think it's a good way to look at this next stretch for the Astros, who we talked about this stretch that they're in, this 34-game stretch where they're playing teams at or below 500, 17-13. In this 34-game stretch, with just four left to play. Rangers, first pitch 3:05 today, and then the White Sox coming into town for a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series. All right, Bregman yesterday had his 19-game on-base streak snapped. Went 0-for-4 in the game, scored a run. They scored a run after he reached in the eighth because Corey Seager made one of the stupidest plays I've ever seen on a Major League Baseball diamond. You brought up the warning track power, and this is something with Bregman. Like, you look at the numbers, and they have not been good. They've been nowhere near what we've seen from Alex Bregman in the past, 18-19, when he finished top five in MVP voting both of those years. And look, I expected the power to be gone, like, honestly, this is something we talked about earlier this year. Like, he didn't show any power last year, didn't really show much power in 2020. I said earlier this season, never expect Alex Bregman to hit 40 home runs in a season like he did in 2019. The average isn't great. The slugging numbers aren't very good, and he's still in the number three spot of the lineup. But do you think the Alex Bregman pop, do you think that bomb power, has he lost it? Has Bregman lost the ability to do that?
It concerns me. I mean, I even said to you, and we were talking about this a few shows ago, the fact that I really have legit issues with it. Maybe it is a baseball, because it seems like he's barreling up baseballs. And if he's barreling them up and he's the Bregman that we've always known him to be, those balls normally end up in the bleachers. And they're not. And they're not carrying. And he's not getting the kind of distance that I'm used to seeing from Alex Bregman. And it's a concern of mine. It's one thing if you say, well, that was a, you know, in one game against Miami where maybe with the roof closed or whatever, that the ball wasn't carrying as far. But off the bat again last night, I thought, oh, that's gone. And especially because he hit it down the left field line. And like you said, it's only got to go 317.
No. It went 317.
Okay. It went 317, but it didn't have to go too far to get out. And yet, you know, it goes 317 and it's caught on the warning track. And I'm going, it popped into my head immediately again. What's going on with his pop, with the power, the power outage, if there's no other way to put it, from a guy that normally, when he barrels it up, gets a lot of distance?
See, we haven't seen that power, though, since 2019. And he was never, whenever he came into the league, you didn't expect Alex Bregman to have that pop, right? Like him hitting 31 home runs in 2018, him hitting 41 home runs in 2019, that was not what you were expecting whenever you saw Alex Bregman, one drafted at LSU, coming through the system. I feel like 31 and 41 in back-to-back years, 72 combined, is the anomaly, not the norm for Alex Bregman. I think Alex Bregman, honestly and truthfully, is probably more of a 20 to 25 home run type of guy at you know this stage of his career, 28 years old. I've been saying for a long time, I don't think he is a guy that's going to clear the table. Like the three spot, you expect some run production, right? You expect a couple of guys to get on base. You expect him to have some extra base hits, hit some balls out of the yard, and drive in runs. The Alex Bregman that we've seen so far this year, and quite frankly, the Alex Bregman we saw last year, and quite frankly, the Alex Bregman we saw in 2020, this isn't a 2022 thing. This is a last three season thing with Alex Bregman. Injuries, all that stuff. I think Alex Bregman's healthy right now, and he's been the same player he was last year. He's been the same player he's been in 2020. Because Alex Bregman isn't hitting for the power and he's not slugging like he did in 18 and 19, and yes, I think the power is gone. I don't think we're ever going to see 40 home runs from Alex Bregman ever again. He is a table setter. His approach at the plate, he sees tons of pitches. He doesn't chase. He has great strike zone command. To me, he's a hitter at the top of the lineup, not the middle of the lineup.
You better change his swing then, Jeremy, because he's still swinging like he's got pop. And he's swinging trying to elevate pitches, and he's swinging to try and pull way too much. And even BMAC was the one that first brought this to our attention about the fact that he's not going the other way trying to take a ball to right field. He's constantly trying to get up underneath it a little bit and elevate it and get it, to the pull side. And then he better change his whole approach, because the way he's attacking, at the plate, he's acting like a power hitter. And he is not trying to hit low-line drives and hit, gaps and alleys. He's swinging for the fences in a lot of cases, and that's not going to get him the best results. He needs to start going the other way. He needs to, on the outside pitches, take a page out of Michael Brantley's book and just look at the approach when you're not trying to hit it out of the park every single time. And maybe that also was affected by, like you said, where he bats in the lineup. But it could be a couple adjustments on multiple fronts that have to be made if he truly doesn't have the power that we saw early in his career.
I agree with everything you said. And to me, it is somewhat where he's hitting in the lineup. Like if you were in the, you played, if you were in the three hole, your mentality is I need to drive in runs, right?
Yep.
Help Alex Bregman. Like it seems like, because a lot of people want him moved out of the three hole. And I understand why I want him moved out of the three hole. He's not driving in runs, although he is getting on base ahead of Yordan Alvarez, which isn't such a bad thing. But help Alex Bregman. Hit the line drives, like you said. Take the ball the other way. But you're not going to have that mentality when you're like pressing at the plate and you're like, man, I need tons of RBIs. Hey, Alex, stop worrying about that. We're going to flip you and Altuve in the lineup. Altuve's a much better slugger than Alex Bregman is at this stage of their career in 2022. Let him drive in the runs. Let Alex Bregman do what he's good at, seeing pitches, not chasing pitches, walking a whole lot, getting on base, because I think him in the leadoff spot, he's done this for a lot of his career before he was really even a Houston Astro, even early with the Houston Astros as well, batting in the two-hole a lot. I think moving him up to the leadoff spot would change
that
approach.
I'm more open to that, and lately I've been more and more open to that than I've ever been in a discussion that you and I have had previously, simply because of the fact that, and I heard Lance talking about this and kind of poo-pooing on it because it was, they're just walks. But to me, that's the quintessential reason why he bats leadoff is he's still getting on base. And when he's getting on base and he doesn't have to worry about swinging the bat to get on base, he's still setting the table for the guys that are supposed to drive runs in. We've mentioned it multiple times. Since Altuve got off the IL, he has been on a tear. He has been a power surge. He has been a guy that's hitting for average. He's hitting for power. Mm-hmm. He's doing everything they need him to do. The only thing that you could say is unfortunate is in the leadoff spot, there's no one to drive in on base before he gets up. And if that's the reason why you try this, I believe that it could have some success. On the flip side, I mean, to add to that, that I think where it could be kind of like a quiet as kept extra bonus is Bregman in the leadoff spot now starts to believe the fact he doesn't have to hit for power.
Yeah.
And then does the things that he constantly is able to do. Because here's the other thing I think I would push back on you on, and I've agreed with you on this, and I've said this over and over again. I've always thought he's had a good eye. This year, I think he's taken too many pitches. If you go back sequentially and look at most of the times when, in almost all of his at-bats this year, he is down in the count or takes a really good pitch or two almost every at-bat on the corner or a pitch that he just lays off. And most of the time, they're fastballs that I got to believe they're on the outside part of the plate, and he's just thinking, I can't drive that pitch to left, instead of just thinking, I can hit that ball hard somewhere.
Yeah, Bagwell, whenever he was doing the games over the weekend, talked about Bregman's aggression at the plate and that the aggression isn't there. And he does see a lot of pitches, which is why I like him in that leadoff spot, because you see a lot of pitches. That's a good thing. Now, I want to mention one of the things about Jose Altuve that why I like him more in the three spot too, because I think this conversation goes like full circle. Like, because the Astros, the on base numbers are fine. The slugging percentage is fine. The Astros' run total per game is not fine. It's towards the bottom of the league. And I think part of that reason is because of Dusty Baker's batting order. So I want to run a few things by you with the Dusty batting order and also Yuli Gurriel. Yuli Gurriel has been one of the most disappointing players in all of Major League Baseball. He's been one of the worst regulars in all of Major League Baseball to this point. Fact, not opinion. Couple of examples where his manager and his GM are now showing signs that perhaps Yuli's falling out of their favor as well. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Right now, before we go to the break, I'll tell you about Doc Linville. Look, I saw Doc yesterday. He is just awesome at what he does. And that is all kinds of plastic surgery, but it starts for him with the NeoGraft procedure, which is where he's made his name here at ESPN 97.5, because Jake Asman is the latest to be added to me and John Granato and Fred Fowler and all the people that got involved with the NeoGraft procedure, listened to Doc Linville, bought what he was selling, and realized it was the best move we ever could have made. Because you know what? The NeoGraft procedure gives you hair where you don't have any or where you're thinning, and it's your own hair. It's all natural. And it has nothing to do with sprays and creams and foams and different ways that you can mask the problem. It fixes it. And the 95-plus percent rate is the exact reason and the only thing you need to hear that should convince you this is right for you, too. Because it's going to take care of you. It's going to give you self-confidence, better coverage area. You're going to look better. You're going to feel better because of it. And it is just a simple procedure. I had no pain, minimal swelling. The procedure takes about a half a day, but I'm telling you, when you're done with it and you realize that all the follicles and the line that he drew to say where they were going to be and they're there and they start growing, it's going to give you a whole lot of energy and encouragement. And as you see them grow on a daily basis, and you'll see the full results within about 6 to 9 months, you will realize, like I did, this procedure is amazing. Doc Linville's the best at it, and you need to check it out. For you guys, you get a free consultation that normally costs $150 to ask every question and find out if it's right for you, too. Just go to 975hair.com and sign up for that free consultation. They'll talk to you, answer your questions, and at the end of it, you can determine if it's right for you and you want to get the NeoGraft procedure, too. I'm glad I did. Check it out today. Doc Linville, 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
1767 texting in, 713-780-3776. I agree, Joel. When breaks came up, he was crushing line drives to both gaps and up the middle, and his swing was more flat. Just looking at the Futures All-Star game, he was pounding balls off the wall, line drives into the gaps. But yes, his uppercuts and one-hand swings too much. See, I think he's trying to hit for power. I think he's trying to be a three-hole hitter. Help him help himself. Moving that leadoff spot. Say, just get on base for us, Alex. That's what we want you to do. Be our table setter for Brantley, for Altuve, for Yordan, for Tucker. And one of the other things to, like, kind of make it go full circle here about Jose Altuve has 12 home runs. He's slugging .527. He's, I think, top 10 in slugging percentage in the American League. But 12 home runs, all of that slugging, he has 23 RBIs.
Yeah, again, from that leadoff spot, it's difficult to drive runs in until later in the game, obviously. And the way this team, and I just highlighted it over the last two games, after the third inning, just even trying to scrounge up a hit has been difficult in Arlington. So you just know that with this offense, as anemic as it can be, especially later in games, it's not doing any favors for themselves or for Altuve. But you can't put anything on Altuve. He's doing his part. This could help both players because, you know, if there's a chance that because Bregman relaxes a little bit and he finds either a different stroke or, you know, he starts seeing results, you can either keep him there, or if he gets another power surge and really starts, you know, heating up, now you got a good problem on your hands because now you got multiple options and who bats where and how you set your lineup card, which Dusty likes to do anyway. And it's advantage Astros because regardless of what you do, you would seem like you resurrected one of the bats you have to have, and you got more offense from the whole lineup.
Yeah, I think the way that you can configure it, too, now I think just that would lead to more runs. On-base percentage, okay for the Astros. Slugging percentage, fine for the Astros. It should add up to more runs. I think the batting order, and I think the fact that they're just lousy with runners in scoring position, but you can turn that back to the batting order, is part of the reason that the Astros are so low in runs when some of the other numbers would tell you that they should not be. Now, as that comes around to Yuli Gurriel, couple of thoughts and couple of things that either his manager or his general manager have said. And anytime we bring up Yuli and we talk the truth about what Yuli Gurriel has been in 2022, people don't like that because they're fans of Yuli Gurriel. And I understand that. I'm a fan of Yuli Gurriel. I hope he figures it out. He's 2021 Yuli from June 15th on. But he hasn't been. And there's other examples now of maybe where his manager's losing faith in him and his general manager is losing faith in him. Yuli been the five spot pretty much all season long. Pretty recently, Dusty flipped Tucker and Yuli Gurriel against right-handed pitching in that five spot, where Tucker's batting fifth against righties, Yuli's batting sixth against lefties. But back-to-back days now, this includes yesterday, back-to-back days now where Yuli Gurriel's been in the sixth spot behind Kyle Tucker, even with left-handed starters both days. So Dusty Baker has demoted Yuli Gurriel a spot in the lineup against all starting pitchers.
And again, I'm not mad at that at all.
No way.
I think that's something that has, you know what? No matter how loyal Dusty is or anybody can be in the game of baseball to a player that's done the kind of things that Yuli's done for this franchise, it's a business. And tough conversations are going to be had. Sometimes they happen more frequently than we are made aware of. But no matter what, it has to happen with Yuli sooner rather than later to say, hey, man, look, we love you. And you've done a ton here. And everybody in this clubhouse is behind you. But at a certain point, we can't worry about image and what people, you know, where you think and feel you should be, or if you have any issues with this. If you want to continue to play, you need to bat where we think it's best for our team right now. And right now, the way you're not getting base hits, not knocking guys in with less than two outs at third base, not doing anything other than hit doubles that's helping this team, we want to find a way to keep you in the lineup. So in order to do that, we have to move you down. I don't think he seems like the kind of player that's going to have a problem with that.
No.
I also firmly believe, as you and I have talked about, I believe he needs a couple days off. The problem is with Pena out and Diaz at short, now your quick fill-in fix at first base is playing shortstop. So you can give the kid a couple chances at first base like we were talking about, but it's not the ideal solution with a guy that's really never been there, done that before in the major leagues, as opposed to taking a Ledmus Diaz, who you may take a little step back in terms of the defense, but offensively is going to be a contact hitter that's probably going to be better for you.
Yeah, at this point, they're comparable, right? At least offensively. Defensively, yeah, Yuli's still one of the better defensive first basemen and makes plays each and every day that you're like, man, wish he would get the bat going, because defensively, he prevents a lot of runs, as James Click likes to talk about a lot. So Dusty Baker, look, it maybe we're splitting hairs there, right? Oh, there's not a huge difference between the five spot and the six spot. Although Dusty Baker, it's like moving big ships, right? For him to move certain players in the batting order. I think the fact that Yuli's hitting sixth and Tucker's hitting fifth after it was flip-flopped for most of the season speaks more to Yuli's struggles than perhaps we're willing to realize, because Dusty Baker doesn't switch the lineup, doesn't make wholesale changes a whole lot with that batting order each and every day. But maybe we're splitting hairs there. James Click, he's got a weekly visit with the QB1 down the dial, the flagship, and he talks to him every week about the various topics that are going on with the Houston Astros. He was asked, James Click was, about Yuli Gurriel. He said, what do you think right now, Yuli Gurriel? I forget the exact phrasing of the question, but he kind of gave him an out to kind of talk around it, if I'm being completely honest. And James Click kind of went out of his way to say, yeah, he's discouraged about Yuli Gurriel to this point, and we're going to lean on the track record, which I find that second part, we're going to lean on the track record, to be like the sign of death for Yuli Gurriel. Because remember whenever James Click signed Yuli Gurriel to the contract extension 2 years ago, he's having a lousy season. But why did he give him the money? Because of his like advanced numbers, the projected numbers. He thought he was going to bounce back because of the projected numbers. But here's James Click not talking about projected numbers like he talks about with Alex Bregman. He's not talking about what they expect Bregman's going to be. He's saying they're going to lean on the track record. That is out of the theory and the philosophy of James Click. Click saying that to me is a sign that they don't think Yuli's going to bounce back.
Well, I think with every passing day, it's kind of like we were talking about the offense. It's one thing to say by mid-May, late May, that this offense was going to bounce back. Everybody was holding out hope that, hey, by mid-May, late May, Yuli's going to show who he really is. He's going to come back. He's going to be the hitter we've always known him to be. There's not going to be any issues. But here we are in mid-June, and we're still talking about Yuli Gurriel and his shortcomings at the plate. Here we are. I also think, Jeremy, this would be less of an issue if the offense was hitting the way it normally does.
Sure.
If the offense was still being productive, putting up crooked numbers, doing the things we've gotten very accustomed to seeing, I believe that there might be a different philosophy and outlook on how they view Yuli Gurriel. But because they are scuffling for the most part, and they are underachieving in terms of what they normally do offensively, more focus is going to be put on every aspect where they're underachieving. And that means, look, the play Maldonado makes again the other night is exactly the reason why that's the last thing they're going to worry about right now.
Yeah.
They have bigger issues on their hands. They got a young player who isn't hitting like he used to in Bregman. They've got an older player that isn't hitting at first base. And they've got a platoon situation in center field that isn't ideal. So it's a good problem to have that you're in first place in the division, but you still have issues that you have to focus on before you even start talking about the bullpen right now.
And the Astros aren't trying to win a division. Like,
We've talked about that.
That's the first box you have to check. I realize that. And there are other ways to get to the playoffs other than winning your division. The Astros want to win their division. They want to be a top two seed. Those are the goals you're playing for in the regular season. But the Astros aren't trying to build a team from August 3rd on after the trade deadline and through the rest of the regular season that's going to win the AL West. They're trying to build a team that's going to have a parade in the city of Houston.
So I said, you're not watching standings for the division. Your standings are the American League and where you sit and who you're competing with and how you stack up. And you know the Yankees are running away with it. But you and I have both said you got to finish in the top two to be in the best position to have the best matchups and have home field to get to where you want to go. And as part of being able to do that and stay ahead of those other teams, you have got to do what's necessary offensively and defensively, and that's why we're taking a deeper dive on a daily basis on areas that still need to be addressed.
Yeah, one of the things, too, whenever you talk about Maldonado, and you're right, like if you were scoring tons of runs, and I still think that this offense as currently constructed still has the chance to score a lot of runs, I would love, certain bats in this lineup for certain players that I think would help the team quite a bit. But I think you have a tweak here, a tweak there. You could still win with this nine. One thing that you're going to have to consider with Martin Maldonado, too, is the fact that the Astros and James Click, and we talk about this quite a bit, they put a lot of stock, and we had the conversation yesterday, elite offense, elite defense, which of the two are you going to take, which is a blanket conversation, and it kind of depends on the position you're talking about. They put a lot of stock on defensive runs saved. And they also put a lot of stock on the catcher position. And a lot of times when we talk about the catcher position and what they bring defensively, we look to see their arm. Are they throwing out a lot of base runners? Which Martin Maldonado does. It's a pretty high rate. Texas kind of took advantage of him a little bit, although I would say it was more on the pitcher.
It was definitely on the pitcher, yeah.
Both times. And we talk about the framing. We talk about blocking pitches in the dirt. But I think one of the more underrated things from a catcher is basically calling a game. The pitches he's telling the pitcher to throw. And you can do that from the dugout. I don't know if you can. I think it's a lot different whenever you're having a day off in the dugout versus being the battery mate behind the plate, because you're going to war, basically, with that pitcher. One of the more underrated things that Martin Maldonado does is not the leadership like Correa. It's not the mound visits like Correa. It's about getting from out number one through out number 27 with how they're attacking every single hitter they're facing from a pitch arsenal point of view.
I would say this too, Jeremy. For all of the different coaches that try and call a game from inside the dugout, that's all fine and dandy, and a lot of them were ex-catchers and things like that. But unless your dugout was sitting right behind home plate, it's not you're not as good as you can be in terms of calling a game, because you don't see the break of a pitch. You don't know how you framed it. You don't feel how the fastball feels when it gets into the mitt, and you know the kind of bite on a breaking pitch or the drop on a splitter or or the movement on a change. And so the fact that you know what you mentioned is very much factual in terms of Maldi calls a great game, but more so than anything else, too, on a pitch-by-pitch basis without having to make mound visits, he's communicating with that pitcher, telling him, hey, you didn't get the call. You're good. Okay, but you know what? You got to keep this pitch down. You got to do these kind of things. And then when he does have to make a mound visit, it's impactful as well, because they know something's going on, that I got to focus on what he's got to say, because he sees things that I'm not seeing while I'm on the mound or while they're in the dugout. And so that's the least of your worries right now. The bigger concerns are what we mentioned with those positions, first, third, and center field, and the fact that those guys are not performing on a regular basis, and those are guys, especially at first and third, that you need to perform if you have higher expectations than just winning the division.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, the golf's third major is this week. The U.S. Open starts tomorrow from the Country Club in Brookline, Mass. So we got to have our Killer Bees U.S. Open draft next. Blankers won it last time. Looking for some revenge. Maybe Brendan will be a competitor this time. We'll see. We draft when we return. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5.